We were on that train for many hours without food to eat. The sight of Mr. Beku taking a wrapped-up lotus leaf from his bag and unwrapping it to reveal a rice ball sprinkled with sesame seeds certainly got my attention. But when he took it in his bony fingers and pressed it into his mean little mouth without so much as looking at me, I felt as if I couldn't take another moment of torment. We got off the train at last in a large town, which I took to be Kyoto. But after a time, another train pulled into the station and we boarded it. This one did take us to Kyoto. It was much more crowded than the first train had been, so that we had to stand. By the time we arrived, as evening was approaching, I felt as sore as a rock must feel when the waterfall has pounded on it all day long. I could see little of the city as we neared Kyoto Station. But then, to my astonishment, I caught a glimpse of rooftops reaching as far as the base of hills in the distance. I could never have imagined a city so huge. Even to this day, the sight of streets and buildings from a train often makes me remember the terrible emptiness and fear I felt on that curious day when I first left my home. Back then, around 1930, a fair number of rickshaws still operated in Kyoto. In fact, so many were lined up before the station that I imagined no one went anywhere in this big city unless it was in a rickshaw, which couldn't have been further from the truth. Perhaps 15 or 20 of them sat pitched forward onto their poles, with their drivers squatting nearby, smoking or eating. Some of the drivers even lay curled up asleep, right there in the filth of the street. Mr. Beku led us by our elbows again, as if we were a couple of buckets he was bringing back from the well. He probably thought I'd have run away if he'd let go of me a moment, but I wouldn't have. Wherever he was taking us, I preferred it to being cast out alone into that great expanse of streets and buildings, as foreign to me as the bottom of the sea. We climbed into a rickshaw with Mr. Beku squeezed tightly on the bench between us. He was a good deal bonier under that kimono even than I suspected. We pitched back as the driver raised the poles, and then Mr. Beku said, "Tomi Nagacho, in Gion." The driver said nothing in reply, but gave the rickshaw a tug to get it moving and then set off at a trot. After a block or two, I worked up my courage and said to Mr. Beku, "Won't you please tell us where we're going?" He didn't look as if he would reply, but after a moment he said, "To your new home." At this, my eyes filled with tears. I heard Satsu weeping on the other side of Mr. Beku, and was just about to let out a sob of my own when Mr. Beku suddenly struck her, and she let out a loud gasp. I bit my lip and stopped myself so quickly from crying any further that I think the tears themselves may have come to a halt as they slid down my cheeks.